Hello, everyone, and welcome to Wine Control, our podcast, episode 344. I'm Benjamin Yoder, here today. Talked about video games, good, rounded episode this week. We have new games. I feel like it's been a while since we had new games, like, just raw new games talk. Not that there's a ton, but you got a couple here. Some games I played a handful of shorter games, so talking a little bit about that, including a Gundam game. We'll give you a full breakdown of that Gundam game. A brief bit of Puti Koda stuff I want to talk about. It's like the photo booth kind of thing. And then also, we got a Square Enix Million Arthur NFT follow-up, everyone's favorite. I thought the news was bigger than it was going. Like when I first read it, I thought the news was maybe a bigger sign of Square Enix getting out of the NFT market. But once I reviewed what was going on there, I think I kind of changed my mind and think maybe it doesn't really tell us all that much. But still, I'm probably the only person talking about the Million Arthur NFT game at this point on the internet. So we will continue to talk about that. So. Anyways, I've been playing some shorter stuff more recently. One of them being Dojin games. I don't know if you follow the One Couture Plus channel, you may have seen I put up some very, very, very short video reviews focused around various student games mostly that were, I think, from Chiba University specifically that I was kind of uploading. And the videos probably shouldn't exist, but it's okay. It's fine. It takes like less than an hour to put them together. And I've always wanted to do a more, like, deeper look at those Dojin games. Not to say there's always something deeper to say, but I thought it would be interesting to, like, kind of, you know, single them out, take a look at them. And I think on the One Couture Plus channel in general, I've been trying to do that where I'm like, I'm going to focus this conversation on this one game. And then if I want to have, like, a greater conversation about that stuff, I'll do that on the main channel with, like, a, you know, scripted video kind of thing. That's been kind of, I feel like, the workflow between the two channels that I've been doing. So, but yeah, there's a couple videos up there for that. Very short, so if you haven't watched those, they're there. One of them is just kind of very rambly about me talking about, it's a game called, like, Washing Your Hands at the Sushi Bar. So if you want to check that out, you can check that out. Very, like, WarioWare kind of game. But with only one WarioWare minigame. And then the other one was Collector Ninja, which is a very basic coin collecting game. So I have a couple of ones that are a little bit more in-depth that I kind of scheduled out for the future. I probably will space them out more so they're not coming out back-to-back in the way these two did. Because I don't think the interest is really there, honestly. It's more of just my own personal interest in doing that, so... And I guess one thing I also wanted to do, maybe I should have started with this, is before we get into me talking about this Gundam game I played as well, is just a quick follow-up on kind of the discussion we had last week about, you know, okay, what does the industry look like? Where, like, well, like, let's look at the company revenue and what this means for, like, if the industry's crashing and stuff like that or not. One thing that I found out, and I think I didn't know this last week, but I did do a little looking into this week, was wages in Japan. So one thing that keeps coming up is this idea that, like, Japanese companies are more successful right now because they are raising wages for their employees in the game industry. And, like, I didn't really know if I didn't know what that was, but I was wondering if that really actually was a pointer to success. I looked into it, and it seems like in Japan, wages in general are just kind of going up. I watched a video that was kind of about, like, the economy of Japan from the last, like, 30, 40 years. And it seems like the more recent trend is that the wages are going up now that prices are actually rising again in Japan, which hasn't really been a thing. So there are some situations where, like, Nintendo did raise the prices at a higher rate than average. So it was like, or wages at a higher rate than average, like 5%, I think was, like, the standard rate for 2023. Where I think Nintendo did 10%. So they're definitely giving a bigger payout than other companies. But, you know, Nintendo is also one of the most successful companies in Japan, right? So, but yeah, I just thought that was something that I wanted to kind of follow up on, that it seems like there is something there regarding Japanese wages where there's just a general increase of wages at the moment. And that doesn't necessarily reflect that these companies are necessarily doing better. It's more to do with, like, the Japanese economy as a whole, it seems like. And it seems like all companies are raising wages to some extent. So anyways, just a quick follow up on that. All right. You ready for a deep dive? Mobile Suit Gundam Seed is a game I played recently. I don't know if this is just Well, I know there's multiple Gundam Seed games on the PlayStation 2. I don't know if this is the full name, if it's just Mobile Suit Gundam Seed, but it's the only part of the name that I can easily interpret on the box. I believe this is a Japanese-only Gundam game based off the Gundam Seed series, and I've never really watched Seed, so I can't say too much about it, but it basically seems to cover some part of the Gundam Seed story. I assume not all of it, since there are some characters introduced here that never really show up again later in the game. But it's a really short and tight game, so there's like not a lot of time, like an hour or two, so there's not a lot of time to really do a lot of storytelling. It seems more like a game where you're hitting kind of like the high beats of whatever story arc this is following. But it's kind of neat. It's like a beat-em-up crossover with like an on-rail shooter. And it's pretty low budget overall in terms of, you know, its presentation and things like that. And just generally kind of how the game feels a little like undercooked in some ways. But I think it has some nice, really cool, smart ideas with like its presentation and kind of how it mixes some gameplay styles. I can't say like how much the presentation itself like matches the actual show because I haven't watched Gundam Seed. But, you know, Gundam itself, I think, is a very kind of like bombastic show in a lot of ways, at least in the parts that that are highlighted in this kind of game, where it's a very high combat kind of focus. But so the game definitely has like a more like very Gundam feel. So I can at least say that with its presentation. But overall, very simple game graphically. It has 2D character portraits mostly. You know, the in-game environments are definitely, you know, some very early looking kind of PS2 environments that don't have a lot of detail to them. So the music and voice acting really feel like kind of the highlight of the presentation when it comes to kind of the more traditional aspects we think about when it comes to like how this game is presented. But it does some nice little small touches with its presentation, I think, are really cool, and maybe in some ways my favorite part of the game. So something that happens in this game is like when you are fighting with other mobile suits, the video comms with the other pilots show up on screen. So when you're fighting them, their little face will pop up and they'll be talking, and then whenever you know, destroy them, they basically go into like their video comm starts flashing, they're like screaming and stuff, which is kind of morbid when you think about it in some ways, but it adds a nice like level of presentation where like each character is, or each mobile suit you're fighting has like a person piloting it, and they're kind of like, you know, I don't know Japanese well enough, but they're kind of trash talking you and stuff like that. There's no really like huge story elements to these kind of character dialogue parts. It's just like a nice little presentational thing. So it's not like you're getting like a bunch of like unique dialogue or anything like that. It's more of a nice presentation thing that goes along with the game. And there's also like attention to detail in some other aspects where like when you're doing a debrief before a mission, instead of seeing the character portraits pop up on screen when you're getting debriefed, instead you see like the person's video comms communications reflected in your pilot's visor and things like that. So there's a lot of like really nice little touches like that throughout the game itself that I think is really cool. And none of it really is important, but it's one of those things where just like a little bit starts to add up over time, and it really starts to fit with that presentation. There's like these unique cutscenes depending on the type of Gundam you get, your Gundam you are loading up and sending out and things like that as well, where it's not really a unique cutscene, it's the same cutscene, but like the parts that get added to your Gundam are different each time, which I think is pretty cool. The game itself is, I think, a little bit more middling. I think that's kind of like the highlight for me of this game. But like I said, it's kind of like a cool mix of a beat-em-up and an on-rail shooter. When it comes to the beat-em-up aspect, which is kind of the main aspect, you know, there's basic combos in terms of like, you know, Street Fighter-esque kind of like directional inputs to do uppercuts and use certain like special ranged attacks and things like that. So you're doing like a mix of melee and ranged combat here. But the gimmick really with this game is the ability to like select loadouts. So you have like 4 different Gundam loadouts. You can't choose them all on each level. Some levels have kind of like preset ones, but you have kind of like a nimbly armored one with like daggers. You also have like a melee focused one with like a giant sword, a laser cannon one where it is basically all focused around just shooting this laser cannon. And then also like a more rounded set, which is kind of like the more standard Gundam setup of like a beam saber and then like a rifle kind of thing as well. The big thing with this game when it comes to like managing your health is that there's kind of 2 elements here. You have your actual health bar, which most of the time won't go touched until you take a lot of damage, because you have kind of a layer in front of it, and that layer in front of it is kind of like your armor, and there's like a basically number of hits your armor can take. But when that armor breaks, it sheds that armor that you have, and basically you lose that kind of extended or the more personalized moveset that you have, and so you basically get stuck with just a unequipped Gundam with just daggers, basically, and it puts you in like a vulnerable state. So when you're choosing, you know, what loadout you want to use, I think a lot of times it's less to do with, you know, choosing the right loadout for a mission. It doesn't really feel like the missions have the variety for it to be like, oh, I should have brought this Gundam kind of thing. They all kind of feel very similar. And so it's more about like your personal preference and things like that. But I do think there is something to be said about like ranged attacks in this game. There's a big focus on moving while dodging in this game, which is for an action game is pretty standard to say, so it's kind of weird to say that. But I think what I mean by that is when we're looking at you know, with a Gundam, you have a jetpack, right? And so in combat, you have the ability to jump and kind of float around, and while you're meleeing, you can't really do anything with that. You just kind of kick and then land. When you have your gun out, you can basically go and fly around and shoot at enemies while you're flying around. So you can dodge enemies, dodge attacks and things like that while you're on the offense at the same time. And this is kind of complicated by the fact that there's actually kind of a layer in the background of the game as well, where characters will sit in the back and shoot at you, and you can target and shoot at them as well. So you're dealing with more than just, you know, the enemies that you're fighting in front of you. You also need to be shooting at the enemies in the back, and they're shooting at you, and you're kind of dodging while you're running around and shooting kind of thing. So the jetpack kind of lets you jump in the air, float around, and shoot at enemies. So there's kind of a cool 3D element to this game, and it gives you ability to kind of like evade around while being offensive, essentially. There are also levels that are like largely dedicated to just shooting. So the shooting levels are basically kind of where it gets into that kind of like Star Fox realm. You're like on rails. Enemies just kind of like show up and you basically just like shoot at them. And while it is basically the same feeling of just basically like it's the same guns and stuff you're using in the standard mode, the big difference here is how your jetpack works, because you're always flying. Your jetpack just works in bursts. So the way that enemies shoot at you have different patterns and things like that. And so you have to kind of like manage your burst so you can burst out or boost out of the way at the right time. It's not very hard to do. So I'm in saying that it's not like a very challenging thing, but it is just like a different way of which you kind of interact with these levels. But it is very slow overall. The enemies kind of like crawl in on stream in a slow pacing, unfortunately. So I do think while the combat can get pretty intense when you have a lot of things shooting at you at once, most of the time you're just kind of like sitting there and just picking off enemies as they come in on screen one at a time kind of thing. So it does some nice things. It's like this mix of elements, and there's like nothing really special about the core gameplay. Like there's nothing wrong with it either. Everything just feels like a bit off. Like the character movement's like stiff, you know, which is sometimes a thing that just is associated with mecha. So I think there's a good argument that like, hey, it's a Gundam. You're supposed to move around slowly. And then also the jetpack gives you a lot of freedom in how you kind of, you know, move around while fighting. But you know, when you're doing melee attacks in particular, you are very grounded in a way that just doesn't really feel like the best way to approach enemies. But the game is like very forgiving overall. So, you know, even though it's kind of stiff, you know, it's not going to be one of those situations where you're going to be dying and getting frustrated by that. I think it's more of just like that your experience of interacting with the game. It's just going to feel, you know, not as smooth as I feel like most beat 'em ups generally do. I think there's also just like a lack of impact on animation hits. So it's kind of weird to say this because there are some really, really nice things like the character portraits I was talking about earlier with like those smaller details. But when it comes to like your interactions with the enemies, I don't necessarily feel like there's a lot of feedback when you hit enemies. Enemies just kind of just like bounce off when you hit them with a melee attack. And then when you use your gun, it just kind of like slowly ticks away at their HP bar. It doesn't really have any really major visual effect or anything like that. And special attacks like the directional inputs, and there's also like a HP draining move that's kind of a standard beat 'em up thing as well. They also don't really feel like they have a lot of impact either. They're unique moves, but you know, they just don't have a lot of flair to them. And some of them just feel like, you know, it feels like a Gundam feels like it should have kind of like a signature move set in a lot of ways. I could be wrong about this, but my feeling is that like a Gundam a lot of times feels like it should have a way it like feels like it moves around and does certain attacks. And there's some Gundams in there's a versus mode in this game where you can play as various Gundams throughout the game and they actually do let you use their specials. But in the case of the core Gundam here, the one that you're playing in the story mode, which is kind of the core content of the game. Just nothing really feels very standout, but you know, I don't know Seed, so I don't know what they're working with here. Just like, but the animations just don't feel particularly unique or special or anything like that. And there's also this issue where like, if you get hit, you know, there's kind of like this weird flash effect on your character that shows that your armor's taken damage, but again, it doesn't really feel like you've really been hit very hard, so it just kind of feels like things aren't really hitting you, even though that you're definitely doing damage. But I don't know, it's one of those weird things where it's like those frivolous kind of hard to identify things where it's like the way you hit enemies in this game just doesn't have a lot of feedback when it comes to the visual effects, the sound effects, all that stuff. Just nothing, it doesn't feel very impactful. So when you are engaging with enemies, it doesn't feel like you are doing a lot of damage to them. And in some ways, the HP bars, I feel like at times for enemies, do take a while to drain in a way that's a little frustrating. But I think it's a standard beat 'em up thing for me. That's more of annoyance for beat 'em ups as a whole for me rather than anything specifically with this game. But, you know, it's one of those games where it's like it's an hour or two long. It has some nice presentation aspects. So it's like it's really hard for me to get like upset about anything here. It's like, you know, it's kind of clunky, but you're going to deal with it for like an hour or two and it's going to be done. And there's like things that are nice and neat about this game that I think are worth looking at. But and you know, it's such a minimal investment. I think it's just like a nice curiosity play kind of game. Like, you know, I'm not saying you need to play this, but if you know, can find it cheap or, you know, you just are flipping around a ISO set or something like that, and you just want to kill, you know, a couple hours, I think it's a fine game for that. And you'll get something out of it, in my opinion. But, you know, you're just not going to get, like, the best Gundam game of all time, probably. I say that not really having played many Gundam games myself kind of thing. And, you know, there's not much replay value here as well. Like, the stage, the ability to replay stages, you can't, like, play any of the other enemy Gundams or anything like that, even though you can play them in the versus mode. So, you know, there's stuff like that where it's, like, the replaying the stages just feels like the story mode again. There's no difficulty settings. There's no, like, I guess there's like a score attack, so if you do care about chasing a score, then that's there for you if you want to do that. But ultimately, I think the game overall is just pretty simple, and you know, I think it's just a good, you know, sit down, play for an hour kind of thing. So, you know, play this game if you want a short game that bleeds some Gundam style. and I think that's kind of the main purpose and appeal of this game is just to suck that Gundam into you. Suck that Gundam into you. That game was all right. Jillian's Corner. Well, it's a Kofi, but it's Jillian's Corner. We are again rapidly approaching our we are dislodging the Jillian International Space Station from the atmosphere orbit, and we are bringing it down to Earth. I don't know if we're in the process of bringing it down. I feel like we're in the process of bringing it down to Earth. I think this is a space station that is on fire coming down. I don't think we're waiting until it comes down. I think it is in the process of coming down. Anyways, all that aside, Kofi, if you want to ask me some questions, you can do that. Again, thank you, Demo, Dory, and Megament for supporting me this month. I appreciate it. We are getting close to the goal of basically paying me for a day to work on on a Premiere video. So we'll see how that works out. I haven't done one of those yet still. So we'll see how that goes. I think the how it works is that I have to go back and read it. I think how it works is that if you donate, I think it's like, is it $150? I don't know what it is, but it's like I dedicate a whole day to working on a Premiere video, and then I think I will upload whatever progress I have made, kind of a before and after, I think, is kind of how it is, I believe. I haven't looked at the description of that in a long time. I kind of, you know, stopped thinking about that very early on when we were, like, very slowly ticking towards it, but we did get a lot of traction recently. Again, thank you again for anyone who donated and supported me to help me reach that point. One of the last questions. We're on this flaming space station coming down to the ground. We're going to fall into the ocean. Jillian looks you in the eyes and says, what is a series you've never tried? what is a series you've never even tried? I think is the exact wording of that. I assume specifically a game series because we are a video game podcast. A lot of RPGs, apparently, when I was trying to put this list together. I think the number one, the thing that always stands out to me is Persona. I think, you know, the fact that I like JRPGs in general, I like a lot of, you know, games that have anime aesthetics and things like that, and just the era of game I like, I think people are sometimes surprised that I don't, play Persona and Shin Megami Tensei games. The closest I've ever come to is Machina X, still. And I think the reason I still think about it fairly often is that I do kind of feel like Persona 4, in some ways, is kind of like a mini Final Fantasy 7 moment in the West. You know, I think Persona 4 really opened up, when it comes to Golden, I guess, specifically, really opened up Western audience. And maybe part of this is also, you know, Western RPGs in general and how they are handling, you know, how they are getting more popular and stuff like that. But, like, really opened people up to more relationship aspects of games and things like that, time management aspects of games. You know, I think there was this period kind of in the late 2000s, early 2010s, where you had people kind of re-embracing certain styles of game designs, you know, the Dark Souls kind of, you know, approach kind of thing with being okay with, like, a game being hard kind of thing. Which, I mean, I haven't played that much Dark Souls, so I don't want to necessarily say that's for sure that it's hard, but, you know, that's the general narrative online kind of thing. So I think Persona was really important for that. And so I think part of me is like, maybe I should play Persona 4 someday just to, like, understand the context of where a lot of people kind of first started interacting with these systems in the West and started, you know, experiencing these kind of, like, more dating RPG kind of elements to their games, right? Obviously that's not as clean as, like, everybody just started with Persona, but, you know, I think it's like with Final Fantasy VII, you know, there's a very clear moment where a lot of people played these games and were more open to that aspect going forward, I feel like. One thing that also kind of falls within in that camp of, like, people expect me to play it, I think because I care a lot about doujin games and things like that, people think I care about Toho. I do not have any experience. So that's not to say I never will. I still want to play, like, shooting games, but Toho is just something I don't care about. I don't care about the characters. I was never big into the music. I'm not a big music guy, though. Like, I really need the music to be associated with an experience. So if I play a Toho game, I'm sure there's going to be a moment where I'd be like, oh, this music's really good because it's a part of this experience and it, like, lines up with all this stuff for me. But it's pretty rare I can just, like, listen to, like, Bad Apple or something like that. Is that the one? Bad Apple, the big one? And just be like, oh, yeah, Bad Apple. The only thing I remember about Bad Apple is the beginning is like, doom, 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 doom. I don't remember the rest of the song. But yeah, that's another one. Bethesda RPGs, you know, Skyrim, Oblivion, Elder Scrolls, Fallout, things like that. All those I haven't really touched. I probably should have touched one of those at some point. I don't really know what that looks like these days. I do passively consume some Skyrim through Any Austin. I believe this is his YouTube channel, where he does employment surveys of various Skyrim towns. I do consume that. He also did an analysis of woodworking in Skyrim with a wood carpenter or something like that. It's a really interesting channel. There's a lot of things I like about the his channel, but like, just in terms of concept, enough that, like, I will watch a video about Skyrim even though I do not care about Skyrim. But that's probably the most Skyrim I've consumed in my life, or any of Bethesda RPG in my life. I did briefly play Oblivion. I played it at a friend's house. He was, I think, out of town for a day, and I was just stuck at his house for the weekend. So I just, like, I forget what he had to go somewhere for a day, and I think I just stayed at his house and played Oblivion one day. And I played it mostly in third person, which is not how you play Oblivion. And I played it with the bow, so it was a poor experience for me. And then I ended up in a situation where the objective I needed to do somehow. The soldiers who were supposed to help me complete that objective considered me bad, so they just would kill me anytime I came close to the objective. So I don't remember exactly what happened, but I remember that was my experience. It's like, I think it's a tower. Oblivion have towers going on or something like that. You go in a tower and you fight some enemies and you do something. I don't know. Don't ask me. Wizardry, Ultima, another thing. Just big old Japanese RPG series, but really that kind of style of RPGs in general, that kind of, like, you know, first person, go in a dungeon, you know, it's a maze, draw your map, the Etrian Odyssey kind of deal, that kind of thing. I've never really messed with those games. People definitely kind of try to surface those in a way that I think is a big deal, because, you know, the impact it has on the Japanese industry. Sometimes I wonder with that kind of stuff. I think this is going to be a weird conversation. I was not expecting to have this conversation. Sometimes I think a lot of times we, so I think people want games to get credit due where it's due, right? So when people talk about like where did Final Fantasy come from, right? You know, especially in the West, we have these ideas of where these RPG series came from and why they succeeded and things like that and all that stuff. But like, so I feel like there's this big thing of just like, Americans don't appreciate wizardry and stuff like that. And for what it did for them and what it got them kind of thing. And, I think there's some truth to that. I think it's a little weird when it seems like it is a frustration. I say this after yelling about Konami for like fucking a month now, so who am I to say anything? But I think it is a little weird when it's like this weird frustration of just like, well, they don't know where this came from. I wonder how much of that is caring about how the players communicate that versus creators communicate that. I'm gonna guess it's probably more of a frustration towards creators, right? So when people are telling their little like RPG, you know, it's the problem. I wrote a post about this a while ago, like this idea that like when you speak, you know, you speak with a sense of authority, right? Because that's going to be the thing that's going to make people believe you most. And so it makes me kind of, I'm not going to say that I question authority, but I think sometimes we accept confidence as authority, right? And I don't think that's necessarily the best judge, right? I think authority has many other things, and I think, you know, having a background that fits into it is helpful, right? There's like the Apex Legends kind of thing where there was something happened in a tournament and people were claiming the game had like some pretty big security flaws. And there's a big YouTuber, I think his name's like Pirate. Is it Pirate Bay Software or Pirate Software? I don't know. He I watched like a video with him that was like an hour long, and he, at least, you know, I'm not going to say that like I've not done the research on his background. But, you know, he at least has like a series of credentials that he presents up front about like his previous work. And then also, you know, his involvement in various like hacking conventions and things like that, and trying to analyze things. He is somebody that I would say talks with a strong sense of confidence. I would assume that he's, I don't know. I think sometimes like talking with a strong sense of confidence is not a bad thing per se, but I think the big thing is having stuff to back it up. And I think most of the time, what I've seen with him, he's had a pretty good backup of for his confidence. So I think it makes a lot of sense. But yeah, he was talking about that stuff, and he just like had a lot more authority in that situation just based off his background from what, you know, again, how he delivered it. I never did research onto that kind of thing. Why am I here? What am I talking about? yeah, like Final Fantasy, people saying like, oh, Final Fantasy was inspired by this, you know, and then, you know, the reality is a lot of times that we don't really have the context of what it was inspired by, but we make assumptions, we build these stories about what it was inspired by, right? That's why I'm like so wishy-washy on the Kira Kira Pop Princess thing, where I'm like, people who worked on Blue Breaker worked on this, and also this game reminds me of Blue Breaker. I don't want to sit there and be like, oh, it inspired a Blue Breaker kind of thing, or a Kira Kira Pop Princess kind of thing. So anyways, I'm getting in the weeds. This doesn't really matter. Let's move on. Single player Uncharted games. I've played the multiplayer Uncharted stuff, but not any of the single player stuff. So that's something I probably should do someday. I own most Uncharted games because of the multiplayer, except for the first one, because guess what? Did not have multiplayer. I think was there Uncharted 5? I don't think there was. Oh, there was like a weird spinoff thing that would feature two characters, but it wasn't co-op. I think that's what I'm thinking of. That was a PS4 game, right? Is there a PS5 Uncharted game? I don't think there has been. Last of Us 2. That was a PS4 game as well, wasn't it? Has Naughty Dog done anything on PS5 that's specifically PS5? I guess not. Yeah, because that would be one of the exclusives, right? Speaking of Naughty Dog, I've never like sat down and really played a Crash Bandicoot game to any significant degree. I feel like that was a big deal when I was younger, and I do have Crash Bandicoot 2, and I have touched it briefly, but no, I couldn't sit there and, you know, tell you what makes a Crash Bandicoot game tick. I know it. My impression of Crash Bandicoot games is it's either a 2.5D platformer, or it is a tunnel you're running through, one or the other. Those are the two Crash Bandicoot, existences: tunnel, side scroller. That's in my brain at least, but I haven't played any of those games really. I have Super Turrican down here. I think Turrican is just a series in general. I don't know why that came to mind, But that's a Factor 5 series, I think. And I think it's like a more of a UK thing. Maybe that's why I put it on here, because it's like, oh, get a little UK in there. Get a little boy, British boys in there. So anyways, I guess that's all I really have to say about those things. Sorry for the mid-wizardry talk of confidence. But yeah, thank you again, Jillian, for your question. We have, I think it's 3 more questions left. One of them, I don't know, I might drop one of them. I think it's like something about like, what would you like to see out of a Nintendo theme park and what do you imagine it looking like? So I think that might have been a question given to me before there was a Nintendo theme park, which might tell you how old some of these questions are. I may drop that one. We'll see. But, you know, maybe that'll be the last one. Maybe that'll be the one that we celebrate with. We live in a world where we can pretend there's no Nintendo theme park. That is within my right as an American soldier on the internet. Anyways, thank you again, Demodori, Megamint. Appreciate it. New video game. Actually, this one was kind of like teased a while ago, but it was kind of formally announced finally. And I almost didn't bring it on the show. There's a reason why. Card in Seal. This is a Battle Network style game with like roguelike dungeons. But the big thing is it is an Inti Creates game. And so it very much fits that style. If you don't know much about Inti Creates, they have this, you know, it's anime aesthetic generally for sure. But they have kind of this, I would say, fandom aspect to their games style. Like, I feel like there are games that are really focused on kind of building these worlds and very, like, character-focused worlds. And they like kind of implementing fandom into those worlds, I feel like. The Gunvolt, you know, the big thing with, like, Lumen is that she's an idol, right? And so they like having the muse, the music stuff. And I don't know anything about Blaster Master Zero, though. I guess I really, what I'm saying is Gunvolt. Gunvolt does that. So this game kind of has a Gunvolt-esque feel to it, where it is very much that kind of like, they have like a bunch of idols and stuff and muses. And kind of the big thing they seem to be saying is that like each world you explore has is like a different game world kind of thing. And they're not real game worlds. You're not going to, you know, meet Mario in Card and Seal. They seem to be made up game worlds. I would not be surprised if the Inti Creates owned properties show up in there in some ways. Like there's a Galgun world or something like that, or a Gunvolt world. But generally, it seems to be probably mostly unique worlds that are going to be based off various types of games and from different eras and things like that. So, but yeah, if you don't know what Battle Network looks like, it's kind of like a card RPG kind of thing. You kind of guys. Two guys, or you're kind of battling. It's a versus game. You have 9 squares on each side, but you have a character that moves around in those squares. So it's not just you putting cards down, and that character activates cards. And typically, depending on the position of that character, will change. You know, where you hit, where a card lands on the other side, essentially. So if you're Mega Man using a gun, you know, things in front of you are going to get shot. But if you use like a grenade, maybe it'll hit like the 4 squares in the back or something like that. I don't know. That's not me making stuff up, but that's generally my understanding of how it worked from when I played it when I was 12. So they seem to be kind of doing that. The roguelite dungeon stuff, you know, I think the problem that comes with a lot of roguelite dungeon stuff in general is this feeling of like, oh, these areas aren't like catered, aren't designed to give you different experiences, things like that, right? So you're just kind of getting a randomized thing. I was trying to think if Battle Network had interesting dungeons, and I don't think it did. I remember them being very basic, but I could be wrong. Do people like the slidey floor in Pokemon dungeons or gyms? I feel like that is a thing that was probably in Battle Network, a slidey floor puzzle. It was also in Ojo-sama Susomo. Bring the PCFX back in at any moment, whenever you may not expect it. Anyways, the reason I kind of thought about not talking about this is, one, I'm actually not a huge Battle Network fan. If I'm going to play a Battle Network game, probably be this one, right? Like, I don't really want to get into the big Mega Man big Battle Network series. I don't need to buy a whole collection of Battle Network games. But Card and Seal, one-off thing, sure. I think the reason I didn't think about or thought about maybe not bringing up is that, like, I think I think AnyCreates maybe is doing a little too much right now. I feel like I'm behind on AnyCreates stuff. They make smaller games, so it makes sense that they put stuff out more often. I think it's very cool that they're doing a lot of unique and new things. They're trying to expand out of Gunvolt right now, right? I don't know if, you know, Gunvolt as a series has kind of fallen off for them sales-wise. But, you know, with Umbraclaw, Card and Seal, the Love Live game and stuff like that, right? They did it is Gunvolt, but it's a different genre of the rhythm Gunvolt game as well. I think that stuff's all very cool that they're doing all these different things. So I forget if they teased anything else at this point. So I think it's very cool, but I'm still haven't played Gunvolt 3 and Blaster Master Zero as a series, but the Blaster Master Zero as a series is more of an issue of, I actually don't know if I have a lot of interest in Blaster Master Zero. I kind of bought it out of the fact that I was like, you know, I like AnyCreates as a company and things like that. But yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I feel like there's too many AnyCreates things in front of me. And so when I have that like AnyCreates moment once a year, I'm like, I want to play an AnyCreates game. They've put out like 3 games. And so it's like, oh, okay. Galgun is another one I picked up as well that I need to play as well. So I mean, at least Galgun's like a very different style of game at the very least. Right. So, but yeah, so anyways, it looks cool. I think I might check it out. I think they haven't given any date or anything. I think they just announced it. And I think it is on basically all platforms. I think they have pretty much gotten their engine working where I'm not going to speak for them, but it seems like they're willing to put it out on basically everything, including Xbox. I believe this game is also on Xbox. I was going to check, but actually I don't care enough. So we're going to leave that off the table. If you are desperate to know, look it up. So anyways, Puti Kura. You know what a Puti Kura is? I thought it was Pre-Kura. Whenever it's like pretty stuff, I think in my brain it's like pretty. But no, Puti Kura. If you don't know about these are like little photo booths and things like that in Japan. You see them at round ones as well. You can go in a booth, take some pictures, put some effects on you, glam yourself up, things like that. Sega has a I My Mary Puti Kura machine. I was actually watching some ads for this recently, which were kind of nice. It was just like the outfits and stuff were nice, like very dressed up people. Like, I don't know, like in my head, people aren't like putting on these like super nice outfits. But then I think somebody sent me like a thing that was like, check out this Puti Kura place where they have like a dressing room for you with like makeup and mirrors and stuff. And I was just like, oh, people taking this seriously. I'd be curious to know like how big the Puti Kura industry is, but the reason this came up is because there was a Princess Peach one, because if you don't know, Princess Peach Showtime came out. I would like to play that game at some point. I don't know how people receive that game, honestly, but I know people were excited for it. There's a Princess Peach one that showed up, and Princess Peach event added to this Puri Kura machine. So an event added. So we're in these limited time event Puri Kura things, which makes sense. Just how arcade machines work these days now. There's like 14 stamps with 5 frames. A lot of it's just kind of the standard Princess Peach stuff. There's not really new assets as far as I can tell, just kind of reusing some old ones. But it plays music and stuff like that. And I love this machine translation of on the official page. Where it says, you will feel like Princess Peach even while shooting. So I thought that was kind of funny. The one thing that I really didn't think about with this stuff is, you know, historically, when you think about Puti Kura, you would have it print out, right? You have like little printout, little things, and you can stick it, like they're stickers, I assume. I feel like the ones I have seen are stickers. And I assume you can get different sizes and things like that, and it probably depends on the type of photo you take in as well. But there's also an attached app that you can use as well. And this attached app basically seems to let you go ahead and upload those to your social media through there as well. I follow a lot of Japanese people, but obviously a very small number and a very particular varieties, right? Very big Otoko doll group, very big dig big Buddy Mission Bond kind of group. Although Buddy Mission Bond has kind of fallen off my feed, I think it is probably less to do with like the lack of interest and more to do with my Twitter algorithm moving me away from that, as it's like, you like all these doll pictures, don't you? I'm like, yes, I do continue to like all these doll pictures. So we'll continue to feed that stuff. And I think a Toka doll gets kind of close to that as well. But I have never seen somebody upload like Purikuda stuff. But at the same time, I wonder, because like a lot of times when I see people in my Toka doll community upload, because they do, because there's like a Lolita fashion aspect to the Toka doll. And so people do dress up, and even if it's not Lolita fashion specifically, like kimonos and stuff like that. And they will post those pictures online, post their haircuts, post their nails, stuff like that, right? There's a lot of this kind of stuff in that group. And I was just like, I've never seen anything that looks like a Purikuda thing uploaded. Interestingly enough. So I don't know if it's like an age demographic thing. You know, a lot of these Toka doll people, you know, it's kind of funny because like there was a while, there's a few year period where like it seemed like they're all having babies and they're all becoming moms. So it's kind of this weird thing where I got to like see this weird transition in life they had through Twitter. Parasocially, I don't know, it's very strange. So like I'm curious if like it's just like, oh well, you know, it is a younger girl kind of thing, so I'm, you know, following adult women ideally, generally. That is my hope. It's one of those hard things, like it used to come up from time to time where it's just like I would be thankful when I saw somebody like smoking a cigarette while playing a Toka doll, because I'm like, okay, I'm not following a child online, just following an adult lady. But, you know, it's hard to tell because, like, I can't read any of the text or anything like that. So, you know, and then if, like, you see someone with, like, a child hand, and you're like, okay, unfollow this person because I don't even want to be engaged in that situation. But anyway, so, you know, it is one of those things where I haven't really seen it online, so I'm kind of surprised. But I'm going to guess it's probably dependent on demographic and stuff like that, right? So... And with the Toka doll stuff, maybe just it's an older audience at this point kind of thing. And the doll dress up thing, I feel like I could be wrong. I feel like the doll dress up thing may have more men involved with it. I could be wrong. Just, you know, you can kind of tell by hands and things like that when people put their hands online, just, you know, not always. But I think the general stereotype is like men have particular types of hands. Women have particular types of hands, or at least nail like. You know, shape and stuff like that. And it may have less to do with gender and more to do with just the, like, you know, socially acceptable ways to pretty up your hands as a woman versus a man, right? Especially, you know, in Japan, kind of a whole other thing. I feel like I'm going down a lot of weird holes in this conversation. but yeah, I get the impression that more of the doll photography and things like that might be more men doing that kind of stuff. But I could be wrong, so... You want to get down weird gender stuff as well. I was recently, this is not related to this topic, or done with I, My, Mary, Princess Peach event mode edition. I was looking at Lika Castle in Japan. And I was like, that's kind of neat. It's like in Fukuoka, I think is where it is. Or no, not Fukuoka. I think it's near the place that had like the power plant that had an issue when the earthquake. I don't remember. It starts with an F. Foo something. But yeah, there's like a little place where you can just go and like basically go on an international adventure with Lika using an AR app, take pictures and then just like stamp in like 2D JPEGs for what's it called? You know, Lika along with your kid that you bring there kind of thing. But it looks kind of cute. And like, it's one of those things that I wouldn't go my way to go there probably. But if I was like in the area, I would probably be willing to just show up and just like look around there. And like, you know, I went to Puro Land last time, which I did go a little bit on my way for Puro Land, but I had the time and day to do it, right? I did not go to Japan to go to Puro Land, which is the Hello Kitty Sanrio kind of park thing. And then I was just like one of those things where I was thinking recently about how there's been limitations on adult men around like pretty cure events and things like that, and how I keep hearing that kind of come up. And also there's like something recently, I think in some city in Kyoto where I think they're basically just like no foreigners. I don't really know exactly how that thing worked out and stuff. But yeah, so I was like, I was doing the thing, I was like, I actually don't know if I would be able to go or not without like having a child or something like that. So I'm kind of curious. It's one of those things that it's like always something to keep in mind when you're in Japan as a guy. Purikuda machines as well. Like you have to kind of look out for signs because a lot of times as a guy alone, you're not allowed to go in them. So if you want to feel like Princess Peach, even while shooting, you need to have a woman there with you or a child or something there with you to allow you to feel like Princess Peach, even while shooting kind of thing. So it's one of those things that, like, I get it, for sure. Women only trains. When I first went to Japan, I tried to get into, like, an Ikemen event hotel, and I couldn't because the hotel was for women only as well. Stuff like that. So it's just something to keep in mind if you're going to Japan and you have this kind of interest range. But, you know, I don't think most men have this interest range, even in the, you know, West or something like that. So I think it's very understandable for them to just be like, hey, let's just, like... nip this in a way that it makes the least amount of the pressure and kind of thing, right? So, but you know, you can get in down to like the whole conversation of like, is that right or not? But you know, I think the reality of the situation is kind of a different thing in a lot of ways, right? So, and that, and like, I'm like a fucking foreigner and. In America, like I have no voice in what Japan does. So, but yeah, that whole thing came up. Anyways, we're getting out of this conversation talking about women's nails, feeling like Princess Peach while shooting, and going to the natural progression point. Square Enix. They're shutting down their Million Arthur NFT game. If you don't remember, this is the one where I think you collected underwear and you transferred them into sushi and then you could trade those for NFTs or something like that. I think that's how it worked. Never played it myself. Started up last year, and kind of the big thing with this game was that it would utilize your Million Arthur NFTs, which were NFTs that were sold at the height of the NFT craze and actually was fairly successful for Square Enix. It was like kind of their first diving into the NFT space. If you don't know what Million Arthur is, long time ago, Square Enix kind of fairly large franchise, and it just kind of disappeared in the course of 5 years. But it came back for this Million Arthur NFT thing, and it's got cute art and stuff like that. The artist is like kind of has a very specific style to it. It's very popular for its web series specifically, so you'll see a lot of like chibi characters and stuff rather than the more traditional art that the original game had. But yeah, they're going to be shutting it down. So initially I thought it was like, oh, well, Million Arthur NFTs are like one of Square Enix's most successful NFT things. So like them shutting this down is pretty significant. You know, it lasted about a year, which is about right for a live service game that failed. Or at least a Square Enix one. But I didn't think about the fact that like, oh, they were selling Million Arthur NFTs before this. And that was the thing that was successful, not the game. Selling the NFTs was successful. And from what I can read, I went through all the documents and, you know, it's all in Japanese because they never did a Western release of this, as far as I could tell. As far as I can tell, they're going to continue to sell Million Arthur NFTs. So that actually is still going to be a thing. So the game's going to shut down May 31st, but the actual NFTs themselves will continue to persist. They're part of Line's NFT platform. So I don't know what Line's current situation is with supporting that and things like that. They're still, I believe, last I checked, the number one, NFT product sold was Million Arthur ones online. So I assume as long as those continue to be successful at the very least for them, or as long as people are making money off that specifically. So, they pretty regularly hold events and things like that as well. So there's like a little community of people who are engaged with this kind of like NFT, Million Arthur thing. They've had like little physical tchotchkes and stuff you can buy around your NFTs and stuff like that too, which I think is kind of cute. But you know, ultimately I think it's still one of those things where we're looking at it and asking, you know, how long is Square Enix going to hang out around in this space? And I think if they shut down this Million Arthur NFT thing as a whole, or just kind of like quietly, you know, sunset it, that will probably be the end of this thing, given it was their most successful thing. I could be wrong, but I generally am in the mindset that we're probably seeing kind of the slow bleed off of this stuff from Japanese developers in particular. You know, we talked about Kusoge last time. And we also talked about, well, I didn't talk about this. I talked about this on Twitter. Tabata is going around and he's building his Pegasus world platform kind of thing. This is something that doesn't come up in the stories as much as I would like when I see people talk about Tabata. When Tabata's talking about AI, VR, Web3, you know, all this kind of stuff. You know, he has a product he's building that is leaning into those things. So, and it also, it has a traditional RPG maker element to it as well. It's an engine essentially built for doing AI stuff, or built for building games around AI, Web3 and stuff like that. And then they also has an RPG element of that as well, where it's a system that's built to basically help you make RPGs. So it seems like they're kind of taking a two-prong approach. But, you know, he has a lot of vested interest in saying, you know, this about Web3, AI, stuff like that. So I think that's something that I just wish came up a little bit more often. Either it's just like a side note that, like, hey, he's working on this tool set, because I think that would be good context for people. But I realize it's kind of, you know, hard to ask people to do that. I was talking about Automata Media a couple weeks ago, and they did kind of leave it out, which, you know, I'd be curious to know why, because when they translated the article, like, they went through the article, read through it, and they do mention in the Japanese article this Pegasus World developer pack thing, but they don't mention it in the Automata Media one. So I don't know if they just think it was not, wasn't relevant enough, or if they feel like maybe it's like maybe it just wasn't relevant enough. But I think for me, that's important, because when he's going around and talking about these things, you know, I've seen some people in that space be like, well, look, the Final Fantasy guy is saying this or whatever, and giving that's his sense of authority. But clearly he has a vested interest in this kind of thing, right? So I think that's important. But, you know, I think that's, when it comes to people talking about NFTs more directly, you know, we talk about it from like a sideshow here kind of thing, right? And you have people who use that as like a way to kind of justify the space they're covering. I think that's where it gets kind of weird. So Automata Media didn't really cover it that way, but they just were talking about his comments as a whole. So anyways, we are still in the Square Enix nightmare. NFT nightmare. I'm still curious to see if they do anything with that other game. They sold those NFTs for that one World War game or whatever it's called. I don't know what it's called. It was like Symbiosis Genesis or something like that. I don't know. This last game here, I think we're going to talk about this. I don't know. I'm debating if we're going to go into some like not safe for work territory here. So just as a heads up, if you're listening on the radio at your office, your boss looking over your shoulder right now and being like, what's this guy saying? What's this guy saying about not safe for my work environment? Bunny Garden. So we've talked about this developer quite a bit on this podcast called Curate. They make a bunch of fairly low budget, vaguely horny kind of games for the most part. Centered around different things. You have what's it called? Reflepi or something like that, which was originally called Massage Freaks, but had its name changed after some controversy in Japan. And then you have, I think it was like a princess game where you like had dual princess, something like that, where basically you kind of went and, you know, felt up the other princess on the other side if you beat them or something like that. A bunch of stuff like that, right? Anyways. So they announced this game called Bunny Garden, and I think what was kind of interesting about this game is it is kind of a hostess club game, which I don't feel like we have a ton of those in English, at least at a scale that it's like is on the Switch or something like that, right? So this is on Switch, PC, and I think maybe that's it. But, you know, basically just, you know, big boob ladies in bunny suits or whatever, but they are at a bar. And they're serving you alcohol, so it's not like sitting down at a table in like a Yakuza kind of hostess club kind of thing, right? So you're at this table, and it's kind of like they call it a dating adventure sim game, which, you know, with hostess club stuff, I'm always curious, like, how much they lean into the fact that it's like not really dating, right? Or if they play into the fantasy that you can get with the girl that's at the hostess club when that doesn't really, like, happen. But I haven't really played a lot of these as part of the thing, but, you know... but yeah, it is that kind of thing. They're doing an English release for it, and you basically have conversation with one of three bartenders. Basically, it's kind of interesting. You can see the other bartenders in the background serving like these other men as well, so they're always like kind of ever present in the background, which is kind of interesting. And I was also kind of surprised. I know this is kind of a weird like tangent. They all have the same boob size, as far as I could tell. I feel like usually in a game like this, they try to go for some variety, right, when it comes to boob size, and they kind of go up and down depending like on what preference is going to be, or at least in terms of like size, right? But you know, they only had, as far as I could tell, one kind of set boob size. So maybe they have standardized. This hostess club follows a standardized boob size requirement. Anyway, so it kind of looks silly. You know, you have little mini games and you play Twister with them, or like patty cake kind of thing, or various little card games and stuff, little mini games and stuff. So it seems to be more about this kind of relationship building thing. Maybe like kind of in the space of like a Dead or Alive Extreme kind of game, where you're kind of building relationships with these characters, and I assume getting some kind of like story element with them, which I actually heard Reflet, the massage game, actually had a pretty decent story from it. I forget where I read that, but someone I was reading had pretty good impressions of the story of that game. But yeah, it has but you know, it's horny and stuff like that, right? It has something called the Panties Thank You Abundance System, PTA, which is about like basically changing the girls' panties. Like the girls has different panties on each day kind of thing. So, but yeah, I thought it was interesting. It reminded me a lot of this one game that I've always really wanted to play. And this game I think is a lot more innocent in some ways, because it was kind of weird. It's like a hostess game aimed at women, from what I remember. But like not in the way that like a hostess club game would be aimed at women. Like, oh, you go and date the boys. Or did you date the boys? You did, didn't you? Because Lupin was in it and he would show up. Maybe I'm misremembering this. Maybe you did date boys. Anyways, there's a cute hostess club game on the 3DS very early on. I think, I forget what it was called, Girls Story or something like that. I don't remember. That I've always wanted to check out and try. I remember Kotaku wrote a very scathing article about it, basically saying it was a bad role model kind of thing. Because if you go to like Akihabara or something like that, you know, you're going down the street and there's just like a bunch of women dressed up, handing out cards for you and like, come to my bar and spend, you know, however much yen on me for 30 minutes to sit down and drink and talk with me. I'm always curious, like how many people actually go and do that, and how much, what is the divide between like a foreign and a Western thing as well? I took one of their cards once because I wanted to go like go and look at the website and stuff. And like they have like a social media feed you can follow for that person as well. So still like post things to be like, oh, I hope I see you at the bar today kind of thing. It was really interesting to kind of just like sit there and like skim around it and stuff like that. But it's one of those things that I would be kind of curious to know what those interactions look like, but I don't want to be the person to do it. I would rather someone else do it and tell me about it. So, but yeah, that other game was, I think it kind of was cute, but like in my head, cause like, I remember there being a dressing room. There's a web series that was online and you would hear like the men outside would be making this noise. I'd be like, zawa, 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 zawa. I don't know why that was the thing, what that was trying to convey, but like women in the dressing room in the background. But yeah, then I remember like the Lupin, the third guy's there. So yeah, I guess maybe that's it. Maybe it's not. Yeah. So Lupin the third comes in as a customer, not as a hostess. So you are playing hostess to this character. So you got Lupin, you got this other, like a bunch of, I think, licensed characters and stuff, if I remember correctly. I don't know if the whole game was licensed characters or if it's just like special events and things like that. I was always really curious about that game. And this game just kind of reminded me that I haven't had a chance to look at something like that. I did play the Yakuza hostess stuff. I found it kind of boring. But I don't know if I was in the right mindset for it, because when I was playing the Yakuza hostess stuff, I was thinking about it in the context of another video game that I wanted to finish. And so like for the problem with me, like side stuff, like in Yakuza games, is like, I'm only going to do so much of it. And I'm usually pretty good about limiting myself in what I do. So I really wanted to, just kind of play that game through. That's kind of my experience with the Yakuza games. I like touching on mini games as a fun side distraction, but I'm not going to sit there and go through an entire hostess mini game like side campaign for the most part. That's probably not happening. You maybe can get me in on that, but probably not happening. So having a game that's dedicated to it, or me going back to a Yakuza game and really focusing on that aspect, I think could be something that potentially could be done as well in that regard. But yeah, I guess what I'm saying is I forgot this is like a space that I wanted to explore. You know, there's Dream Sea Club on the 360 and PS3. I have one of them on 360, but I don't have a hacked 360, and it's a region locked game. So, and it's all in Japanese. So I'd have to figure out that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's an interesting concept, I think. But, you know, built on, you know, an industry that I think is always kind of somewhat questionable. I feel like there's a lot more positivity around like, this sounds really bad. I feel like there's a lot of weird stuff in this podcast, like women offering services through things like, what is that site called? So like the, it's like a like in my head, it's like a cam girl site kind of thing. What is that site called? It's so fucking big. But like people do their like lewds and stuff over there. Until they do. But like I feel like that stuff is more accepted these days. OnlyFans? Is that right? My head says OnlyFans are only girls, but I feel like I've heard guys say OnlyFans. They have OnlyFans before. So I think it's OnlyFans. So that kind of thing. Which I'm curious, like OnlyFans, if it started out as that or if it just kind of leaned into that later. Anyways, that being aside, why was I talking about this? Oh, because it was more, I think, more acceptable in the modern society for this kind of stuff. So especially like 10 years ago when like Kotaku was writing a story about this, I think that it would be more common to see an article say this is not a good role model game at the time. So apparently some stuff happened over Kotaku and a bunch of staff got laid off or something. Or I mean, a bunch of staff got laid off across the board, but I think they're like in a situation where like the management's like really pushing them to guides or something like that. So anyways, I don't think that got very not safe for work. I was thinking about talking about some other stuff, but I think at this point I'm happy to just leave it at that. Panty, thank you, Abundant System. You will feel like Princess Peach even while shooting. Those are my two favorite notes here, I guess. I don't know. Like, Panty, thank you, Abundant System. I think the acronym's fun. The system itself, I don't care about, right? It's just like changing panties in a game or something like that, which, I don't know. It's a horny game, you know. It makes sense. That's there. It's a lot more innocent than Schoolgirl Zombie Hunter's panty implementation. That one's a little weird. I talked about that at some point. I don't know if I ever put like a podcast clip of that out, but I feel like I might have, or maybe did like a casual review for, but I probably talk about that there if you want to learn more about that. If not, I've said enough weird stuff this podcast. Let's leave it at that. Anyways, thank you for coming this week. I'm working on a video right now. I don't really know when it's going to be done. It is pretty done script wise. I'm capturing some footage for it. I don't know how much you need to capture is kind of the problem. But I haven't recorded the audio or anything like that yet, so there's still many steps along the way to get it to where I need to be. The script is basically done. I'll probably continue to do some tweaks to it until I record it. But yeah, like I said, those Dojin game reviews went up on the OCP Plus channel, so check those out if you want to. I think next month the Crazy Climber video is finally out, so you can check that out again on the OCP Plus channel. I've been trying to get some podcast stuff moving forward in terms of like, you know, talking to other people and getting that stuff done. So I hope to have something like that relatively soonish, but we'll see. Been kind of taking it piece by piece at a time. I haven't really talked about it because I haven't really gotten far enough along the creation of it, but at Level Up Expo, I have a Xenoblade panel, or Xeno panel in general, going on. I need to work on that more as well. Got a lot of little things hanging around here and there, and all of it needs attention, so trying to get through that, but we shall see. Otherwise, though, thank you for coming. Thank you again, Demodori and Mega Mint, for supporting me on Ko-fi. And I'll see you guys in a couple of weeks. And I hope you guys have a good couple weeks. Cup of weeks. Bye.